Good afternoon. Labor and Commerce will come to order at 3:22. President, our Representative Harris, Representative Sisna, Representative Bryce, and myself, Vice Chair Halko. Chairman Roekberg is called away in another committee, so I will be running the show until he returns. On the agenda today, House Bills 183, House Bills 211, House Bill 139, and Senate Bill 29. We're going to take House Bill 183 up first. At the request of the chair, I would entertain a motion to move House Bill number 183 out of committee onto finance.
We got a copy of that bill with all the incorporated amendments.
It's my understanding that version K does that. We would need to adopt version K as the work draft.
Is this the one we spent about 6 years on?
Yes.
That is correct.
At least six years.
That is correct. He spent more time on this bill than some of the APUC commissioners spend on their dockets.
If you have the votes to pass it, I'll make the motion.
We passed all of the amendments, huh?
That is correct. They're all incorporated in version K. At least I would need a motion to adopt version K.
I'll make a motion to adopt version K.
Senator Harris, any
House Bill 183, version K.
Any objection? Seeing none, we're working under version K of House Bill number 183.
Short at ease, Mr.
Chair. Yes, short at ease. What is the wish of the body? Representative Harris.
Wish of the body?
I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill 183, version of just approved, version K, with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
Chair, you didn't have time to object.
Take a brief at ease. Next item of business before the committee is House Bill 139, Prescriptions by Psychologists. Is the sponsor in attendance? Representative James?
Chairman, I'll go find her.
Thank you.
So he didn't look like Representative James.
Uh-oh.
What are you laughing for, Ben?
You got to watch that Gordon Evans. He's a crazy man.
I'm going to take a brief at ease.
He's a short time.
Record, Representative James, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that you'd like to hear about House Bill 139.
Yes, ma'am. And for the record.
Okay. I've introduced House Bill 139 to open the discussion of an important public policy issue. This bill, similar to proposals currently under review in several states, would authorize qualified psychologists with appropriate pharmacological training to prescribe medications within the scope of their professional practice. In addition to the substantial education and training psychologists already have in the diagnosis and treatment of mental health and emotional disorders, this bill would require completion of rigorous additional training as determined by the Board of Psychology prior to being authorized to prescribe medication. Alaska has a large, underserved population with mental health problems. Prescription privileges for psychologists will help increase access to appropriate, comprehensive treatment for many of these Alaskans. It will also streamline patient care, give consumers more choices, and reduce costs. I have lots of people to testify who are much more knowledgeable about this issue than I am.
Any questions for Representative?
If you have any questions, I might try to answer them.
Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Harris.
Tough question. What's the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist?
One has med school and the other one doesn't.
Fast. I was asked that question a time or two myself.
So. Yeah, but he's got another answer.
We're going to start by going to some off-net locations on teleconference. And just for those not only in the room but online, we're going to limit testimony to 3 minutes. And if you could keep it within 3 minutes, we'd appreciate it. We have a number of people that would like to testify today. So please don't take offense if I interrupt you and ask you to summarize.
First, Mr. Chairman, Robert Lane, I think those are our witnesses, Mr. Duke, and Mr. Klusman. Robert Lane, the president of the Electrical Psychological Association, would like to make an initial presentation and lead to those witnesses, if that's acceptable to you.
Okay.
And this is David Rogers, for the record, I represent the Alaska Psychological Association.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Sir, would you like to join us at the table? Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Robert Lane. I'm president of the Alaska Psychological Association. To start with, I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity to begin this education process that I hope will lead to the passage of HB 139. This is important legislation, and it will permit appropriately trained psychologists to prescribe medications within the scope of their practice. I believe this legislation will be good for the citizens of Alaska in that it will increase access to mental health services where medication might be useful. It will provide for a better continuity of care for mental health patients. And I believe there will eventually be a cost savings due to elimination of duplication of services. To start with, psychologists have a doctoral degree that is typically 6 to 8 years beyond a bachelor's degree. The legislation that we're proposing here is an education beyond the doctoral degree. Our doctoral degree prepares us to do psychotherapeutic interventions along a broad range of mental health issues. Psychologists view prescribing as simply one tool amongst many in working with mental health patients. However, it's certainly an important tool and one that we feel like would be useful in terms of providing continuity to care so that people are not forced to go from one provider to another. If you look at how psychiatric or psychotropic medications are prescribed currently, what you find is that a relatively small number of people with expertise in this area have long waiting lists and full caseloads, so that actually finding people to prescribe with the appropriate amount of education and knowledge about these medications is really relatively limited. There are studies that indicate that the bulk of psychotropic medications are actually prescribed by family practitioners, internists, people that have even less specific training in mental health than psychiatrists do. We believe that with the amount of training that psychologists receive in their doctoral degree, plus what amounts to essentially yet another master's degree on top of the doctoral training specifically focused on prescribing information and the knowledge that goes into it to do it safely, that psychologists will be able to provide greater access to people in need of these services. The training program was developed in part from a number of blue ribbon panels that had nationally recognized experts in medicine, psychiatry, nursing, pharmacy, the neurosciences, and psychology. In addition, the military, the Department of Defense, created what was called the Psychopharmacology Defense Demonstration Project, in which psychologists were educated to prescribe in military settings. So between the Blue Ribbon panels and the experience of the Department of Defense psychologists who completed all the training and prescribing through the military, we have developed a good training model that we believe ensures safety to the public. Dr. Larry Klusman is one of the people that we have online. He'll be able to tell you a little bit more about the training program and how much rigor went into that so that we can share with you why it is that we know it's a comprehensive model. In terms of the ideas about public safety, we know that across the nation, there in all states, there are non-physician prescribers. These people include physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, let's see here, optometrists, dentists, midwives, in some states even pharmacists are able to prescribe. We believe that with the extra training above and beyond the doctoral degree, that there's no reason why psychologists appropriately trained could not also safely prescribe to people. In the early 90s, the Drug Enforcement Agency, which requires registration to be able to write prescriptions for controlled substances, passed a rule adopting permission for non-physician providers to be able to prescribe. So we know that on the federal level, demonstrated safety has led to that change. Dr. Tim Duke, a Department of Defense graduate, is another person that we have online to be able to speak to you about safety and consumer satisfaction related to psychologist prescribing. So in conclusion, I would just like to say that we believe this bill will be a good one for the consumers of Alaska. It will provide better access for those seeking mental health services where medication may play a part. It will provide for better continuity of care, and it will also provide a cost savings by eliminating the duplication of services. We believe that there's good answers to legitimate questions about safety, and if there are good answers to those, then there's really not good reasons to oppose this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Lane? Mr. Lane, how many other states allow psychologists to dispense psychotropic drugs?
Currently, as far as I know, the territory of Guam is the only territory in the U.S. that allows prescribing. However, their prescription bill is not an independent prescription bill. It is done in collusion with a physician as part of their statutes. The state of Indiana has passed legislation that allows psychologists that have completed the Department of Defense training to be able to prescribe within Indiana. Beyond that, there are no states as of yet that have passed legislation leading to psychologists prescribing. There are a number of states that have legislation pending.
Okay. So there are no other states that allow psychologists to dispense, to prescribe these types of drugs. Has there been any attempts in the last, let's say, 2 or 3 years in various states to pass model legislation like this?
There has been.
And that has passed? Obviously, it's failed.
It has not passed as of yet.
Representative Kapchner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, you stated in your testimony that this would provide greater access to people who need services. Where are we lacking in services? Where aren't there access to?
Well, even in an urban area like Anchorage, you're looking at sometimes 4 to 6 weeks to get an appointment with a psychiatrist, okay? Some psychiatrists have full caseloads so that they're not taking on new patients. So even in Anchorage, more providers would provide greater access. Certainly when you start looking at more rural areas, there's even less access to qualified, competent providers than there would be in urban areas like Anchorage.
Can I have a follow-up?
Representative Kapchner.
How many psychologists do you think would then administer psychotropic drugs?
At this point, we're not sure. One of the things that is written into our legislation here is that it's incumbent upon the psychologists themselves to decide if they want to do the extra training that it would take beyond the doctoral degree to qualify to prescribe. We know that there are some people that have expressed interest. How many people would actually go through the 2 to 3 years it would take to actually get there? We're not sure at this point.
Is there any other questions for Mr. Lane? Seeing none, thank you, sir. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
We're going to go online now to Kansas and take testimony from Dr. Tim Duke. Dr. Duke, are you online?
Yes, sir.
If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, please, and give any testimony. Just a reminder, if you could keep it under 3 minutes, we would appreciate it.
Okay. My name is Dr. Tim Duke. I'm currently a licensed psychologist in the state of Missouri, and I appreciate this opportunity to come and testify to the House Labor and Commerce Committee on behalf of House Bill 139. My testimony this afternoon is not based on any hearsay, fantasy, or hypothetical, but based on real-life experience. I'm a graduate of the Psychopharmacology Demonstration Project. This congressionally mandated pilot project was commissioned to train military psychologists to competently and safely prescribe psychotropic medications. Upon graduation from the program, I was assigned to Fort Hood, Texas, where I practiced as a military prescribing psychologist from July 1997 until July 1998. During this year, my supervisor was a psychiatry consultant to the United States Army Surgeon General. Upon completing my military obligation in July 1998, I stayed at Fort Hood for 3 months as a civilian prescribing psychologist, in which I practiced independently of any physician supervision. It is interesting to note that a majority of my patients were referred to me by family care physicians, and it was this particular group of physicians that advocated on my behalf to the commander of the hospital that I stayed on at Fort Hood. I believe this illustrates the collaborative interaction I was able to achieve with other physician groups who had a choice of whether to send a patient to me or to an outside psychiatrist. As a prescribing psychologist, I saw approximately 1,500 patients, of which all I did not put on medications. These individuals were compromised of active duty soldiers, their dependents, as well as retirees. They varied with respect to race and rank, and in addition, I saw a wide range of individuals with complicated medical conditions that were often on multiple medications. Consequently, the majority of my patients were not just healthy 19 or 20-year-old males. My formulary of drugs consisted of all medications used for the treatment of mental disorders, some requiring persistent follow-up due to blood levels or life-threatening side effects. I provide for you this data so that you can formulate an accurate and informed decision on whether psychologists can prescribe competently. You undoubtedly today will hear from the opposition that prescribing psychologists are unsafe, and House Bill 139 will place the already vulnerable mental health patient at serious risk. They will attempt to provide evidence of my incompetence based upon lack of medical school training and attempt to persuade you that only a medical doctor can prescribe psychotropic medications. However, in the midst of their arguments, not one will provide a shred of evidence that any of my patients were ever in danger or mismanaged, nor will they provide for you one study indicating that other non-physician clinicians, such as nurse practitioners, PAs, or nurse anesthetists, endanger their patients as well. If I were truly an unsafe practitioner, I do not believe the psychiatry consultant to the Surgeon General of the Army nor the hospital commander at that time would have put their reputations on the line for a clinician that was endangering the welfare of his patients. In addition, the Army is not necessarily in the habit of just throwing their money away to hire a civilian psychologist to continue his work as a prescriber. My claims of safety are based on a competent training experience that included coursework taken at the Uniform School of Health Science University, in which I was placed in classes with nurse anesthetists, nurse practitioners, of which I might add, and you've already heard, can prescribe in certain states, as well as second-year medical students. My second year was predominantly clinical work conducted at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. House Bill 139 will provide patients who are in rural areas a much-needed competent follow-up while on psychotropic medications. However, I believe there's a more important reason why psychologists should be allowed to prescribe. This pertains to the continuity of care. As a prescribing psychologist, I did not need to redo my treatment plan or tell a patient who needed medications that they had to wait 3 to 4 weeks before they could see a psychiatrist. I was able to provide a competent or complete mental health service, and for those individuals dealing with severe trauma or serious psychopathology, this was a much welcome service. In summary, prescribing psychologists are not a fantasy or myth. We do exist within the military system and are providing competent and much needed mental health care. House Bill 139 is not asking you to do anything that would endanger patient welfare, or is it asking for anything less than that is afforded to other non-physician groups such as nurse anesthetists, nurse practitioners, or PAs. Thank you for this time, and we'll be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Is there any questions for Dr. Duke? Representative Murkowski.
Thank you. Doctor, I'm looking at what apparently is your resume that's been provided to the committee here. And I understand that you are now the clinical director at Cass County Psychological Services.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you able to prescribe in your capacity there in Missouri?
No, ma'am. It's also a frustrating situation here as well. I mean, I'm about 15 miles south of Kansas City, and I'm kind of in a fair enough way that we're having problems with clinicians in rural areas as well. and I cannot prescribe in Missouri as yet. What I do is kind of collaborative work with the few general physicians, family physicians here in this area.
And so it was just a, let's see, it looks like a one-year period of time where you were actually a prescribing psychologist?
1 year and 3 months, the 1 year as an active duty psychologist, and 3 months as a civilian prescriber.
And one more question then. Can you tell me how many others as part of this DOD project, how many others in the country are prescribing psychologists? Do you know that number?
Yes, ma'am. There are 9, of which 4 are in the Air Force. There's 3 in the Navy, and then 2 others in the Army.
Okay, thank you.
Doctor, Representative Harris.
Dr. Duke, this following along that same questioning, but can you tell us whether or not either in the state of Kansas or in the state of Missouri there's been an attempt by their legislatures to institute any kind of legislation to allow this activity to occur?
Yes, Kansas, I'm not aware of any. In Missouri, we're currently in a House bill committee, subcommittee.
And what are the... And what are the concerns there? Are they similar to what may be our concerns, or can you tell us what the issues are involving it there?
Well, I think the issues, and it goes across the nation, is what legislatures are hearing from the medical side of the house, in that somehow I think psychologists are being sort of portrayed as not independent providers already. I mean, when we get a referral, from the patient themselves or from other physicians. So we're not dependent upon anybody as it stands right now. And I think what's difficult for people to understand is this extra training that we're talking about is very similar to that which is already provided for nurse anesthetists and nurse practitioners. There's a sort of feeling that, well, if you don't go to medical school, then you don't have that capacity to be able to adequately follow up these patients. And that's really the concern, is trying to equate that, one, we are already independent practitioners and do not rely on anybody. Put that with then the extra 2 to 3 years of training that would be required to be able to prescribe, and you really have more of a competent clinician similar to that of nurse anesthetists and nurse practitioners, of which some have a variety of prescribing capabilities in various states.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Dr. Duke, this is the Vice Chair. And my question to you is, why do you think that this legislation has failed in other states?
Honestly, my opinion, I think it has to do with the power of the American Medical Association. I think psychiatry is very fearful that if psychologists were to obtain this prescription authority, the definition between a psychologist and a psychiatrist shortens immensely. And I think at some level they fear their existence, which I think is quite irrational. We always will need psychiatrists. I mean, there's no question about that. We're not asking to be many physicians. We're not claiming to be trained as physicians. So I think a lot of the fear comes from unwarranted areas.
Representative Murkowski.
Doctor, you just made a statement that in order to be a prescribing psychologist, it would take an additional 2 to 3 years of training. Did I hear that correctly?
Right. Post the doctoral level training is what most states are requiring.
Yeah, I'm referring to a letter that we have in our packet here, and it is from a local doctor here in Alaska. And his comment states that House Bill 139 proposes 300 hours or 10 weeks of medical training as compared to a psychiatrist's 8 years of intensive medical training. So there's a big difference between 10 weeks and 2 years.
The thing that I would point out that I think, again, is somewhat of a misunderstanding as to medical training. Medical school is 4 years. The individual then enters into his residency program. At that point in time that he enters into his first year residency program, which is often called an internship as for a psychiatrist, he can prescribe medications. He does not have to go through 8 years of residency to be able to do that. At least that's the way it works in the United States military. So when a psychiatrist or a physician throws up to you that that's 8 years of medical school training, that's not true. That's 4 years of medical school, and upon their graduation and licensed in a state, can then prescribe medication as they go into the residency. So I don't think that we would want to get into the time frame, because again, we could throw at and talk about the issues of nurse anesthetists and nurse practitioners, all of which have simply a BSN on top of a master's degree. So you're talking there about 5 years total, or excuse me, 6 years total, 4 years undergrad and 2 years post-grad as a master's level.
Is it correct, though, that you're not able to prescribe independently, in other words, without the supervision of another medical doctor for a period of time, almost like an internship type of a situation?
The way the psychopharmacology demonstration project was set up is that upon completion of that program, which was a two-year program, I then had to go into a proctorship, which was that was done with the consultant to the Surgeon General, Army Surgeon General, for a year. Then at that point, and if I were to re-enter into the federal system, I could prescribe completely and independently of any physician rule.
But that would be after a three-year period, essentially.
Yes, that would be after the three-year period.
Thank you.
Further questions? Hearing none, thank you very much. Next, we'd like to hear from Lawrence Klausman. Ms. Klausman, are you available? Dr. Klausman?
Yes, I'm here.
And if you could please restrict your comments to 3 minutes. We've got a number of people to testify in another building here. Thank you very much. Please give us your testimony.
Okay, well, let me thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lawrence Klausman. I'm a private practitioner in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm a psychologist. Formerly, I was chief of the Department of Psychology at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, and during my tenure there, 95 to 97, I was the executive director of the Psychopharmacology Demonstration Project. Dr. Duke has already introduced you and told you a lot about the Psychopharmacology Demonstration Project, but I was asked to say a few words about how the training program or the curriculum was developed. Of course, any new program of training takes a little bit of time to develop, and this is true with the PDP as well. The original model for training psychologists to prescribe was with a physician's assistant model. It turned out very early that wasn't adequate, and so a commission of physicians and psychologists and psychiatrists was convened by the Army Surgeon General to devise a better way. They first off came up with the notion that simply a psychologist should complete the first 2 years of medical school, which actually some of the PDP graduates did, thinking because the first 2 years of medical school are where really the basic coursework is given for a physician. After that, however, a committee from the Military Medical School in Bethesda, Maryland, looked at the program and tried to think rationally, along with our outside consultants from the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology, what actually was needed for a practitioner like a psychologist to prescribe medication, recognizing that we already are trained at the doctoral level and practice independently and have been doing diagnosis and assessment for years. And so they came up with a program that was essentially, as Dr. Duke mentioned, 1 year at the medical school there, the military medical school in Bethesda, and a 1 year supervised practicum at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And has that worked? I think the answer is clearly yes. There were 10 graduates of the psychopharmacology demonstration project when it ended in 1997. except for Dr. Duke, who's left the military just recently. All were prescribing medication, so 9 remain on active duty and are prescribing to this day. Their activities have been overseen by an external consultant, the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology, who find their practices to be safe, competent, and effective. And indeed, I like to point this out, one of the psychologists who graduated from the program is now the chief of inpatient mental health services, essentially inpatient psychiatry, at Keesler Air Force Base. So I think the answer, is this a good curriculum? Is this a good training program to have psychologists prescribe? I think that's been answered by the experiences of the graduates. And at that, and I think it's been about 3 minutes, I will pause.
Thank you very much, Dr. Klusman, for your testimony. Are there any questions of Dr. Ripson Malco?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Klusman, are you familiar with the GAO report on the DOD program?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And it wasn't very flattering of the program. It talked about a number of shortcomings. In fact, in 1995, one report said the program should end. And I just wanted to get your comments on that, sir.
Yeah, certainly. The title of the report was, if I can refresh my memory here, the need for more prescribing psychologists is not adequately justified. It's a pretty good title. I think the GAO's opinion that the program should end was essentially a business decision, if you want to look at it that way. GAO felt, with their accounting methods, that the cost of the program was very high. That's number one. And that was at a time when there was, of course, great concern about the federal budget. Number two, they took the Department of Defense to task for not justifying in advance why the Department of Defense needed prescribing psychologists in uniform. And that's the case, and so they did issue a negative report based on that. However, in the body of the report, there's nothing to indicate that these psychologists who had been trained were in any way inadequate or incompetent practitioners. I think the opposite is the case. They recognize that the psychologists out there prescribing were actually doing a good job.
Thank you. Further questions, Dr. Klusman? Thank you very much for taking your time, Doctor, to testify for our committee today.
You're welcome.
Next, we'd like to go to Dr. Imani Miller. Dr. Miller, are you available, sir?
Yes, I am.
Could you identify yourself and your affiliation for the record?
Yes, indeed. My name's Monty Miller. I'm an internist, not a psychiatrist, specially board certified in internal medicine. I was the Air Force Surgeon General at the inception of the DOD Psychopharmacology Demonstration Project in 91, and I followed the project very closely. Incidentally, as Air Force Surgeon General, I was privileged to visit medical facilities at Elmendorf Orphan House and in several isolated areas near Great State and enjoy the grandeur and magnificence of Alaska. I think that you should be aware that the demonstration project, which has been talked to and about, is somewhat misunderstood and has been somewhat misrepresented, although not intentionally, I'm sure. The project was designed to demonstrate the feasibility of training non-MD psychologists to prescribe. Each of the three services was levied to provide 2 psychologists to the program each year. It was not popular. The recruiting goal of 6 per class was not met. 3 dropped out. 2 entered medical school. As you've heard, only 10 completed the program. It's important to note that at first the students were placed in the military medical school curriculum. This proved too difficult. They couldn't handle biochemistry and physiology, and that's not too surprising since they had not even met pre-medical undergraduate basic science requirements. They were then switched to the university nursing school curriculum for the basic sciences, physical assessment, and so forth. The program initially required 2 years coursework at the military medical school and 1 year internship at Walter Reed, followed by doctored, that is supervised patient care assignment. The first class took 4 years to get through. Subsequent classes received 1 year classroom, 1 year full-time clinical training, followed by a year of proctored practice in a hospital environment. As the evaluation of the program, the National Defense Authorization Bill 5 years later, in fiscal 96, mandated termination of the program no later than June of 97 and required a GAO report on cost benefits and recommendations concerning continuation of the project. The extensive 32-page GAO report in April of 97 noted, and I quote, that psychologists could not be substituted for psychiatrists, and concluded that although DOD had demonstrated it could train psychologists to prescribe, the training was not justified because of insufficient need, increased costs, and further that the benefits, and I quote, were uncertain and questionable. The project was subsequently featured on NBC by Tom Brokaw as an example of the policing in America of America, and has been discontinued by DOD. The American College of Neuropsychopharmacology has been referenced to some 600 scientists, including psychologists, were contracted to make recommendations as to how the psychologists should be utilized. They recommended that the advisory council develop the procedures and criteria for using the trainees, and the advisory council reviewed the scope of practice for the BDP graduates, deciding that rather than an independent practice, their scope of practice should be similar to that of physician assistants or nurse practitioners. That is, under physician supervision, according to a treatment protocol and a limited formulary, that is a list of drugs, they were restricted from treating children under 18 years of age and those over 65 for protection of these more fragile groups. Consequently, the graduates were privileged in military medical facilities concordant with their training. It was not a medical degree, so they were credentialed as psychologist prescribers, modeled on nurse practitioner template. They could practice psychology as independent practitioners, but they could prescribe only under the supervision of a specifically designated physician and from a specific limited list of drugs. This remains DOD policy. Now as to the performance of the graduates. In some instances, a symbiotic relationship developed between the graduates and their physicians, supervisors, to the benefit of patients. Other instances have not been as harmonious. The ACNP, under DOD contract to do follow-up evaluations of the graduates, reported that generally, the graduates surveyed were prescribing safely and effectively, given the restricted formulary, proctoring, and the absence of inpatient, that is, hospitalized, seriously ill psychiatric patients. The ACNP subsequently reported several other noteworthy observations, including that the graduate's patients had received a good medical evaluation before being seen by the psychologist, that they had no complex or severe mental disorders, and that the bulk of the patients treated had uncomplicated depressions. They further reported, and it is of particular significance, that most of the graduates interviewed felt they were weak in knowledge of general medicine, physical diagnosis, and use of the laboratory, and that after 3 to 4 years of training. I would conclude by sharing with you that as an internist with prior experience in directing specialty training programs, and based on the DOD experience, my chief concerns regarding the proposed legislation can be summarized without going into too much agonizing detail. I previously noted the psychologist's handicap deficiencies in basic science that precluded their ability to participate at the medical school curriculum level. And at the graduate level, the PhD focus in psychology is on human behavior, not on medical science or medical illness. One can receive a PhD in psychology with only one course in the biological basis of behavior versus the approximate 4,000 hours of medical science in medical school. And that at the postdoctoral level, primary care, MDs, internal medicine, family practice, PhDs, and so forth, as well as psychiatrists, undergo 10 to 12,000 hours of supervised clinical hospital-based experience. I question the severity of the impact of no-resident psychiatrists in some isolated areas, given the mobility of our society to some degree. Most such areas don't have, for example, a resident cardiologist or cardiac cath lab for emergency angioplasty in case of a heart attack either. Finally, given the admitted weakness of the DOD graduate psychologists in general medicine, physical diagnosis, and laboratory uses, I am depression, dementia, and psychosis. Hypoglycemia, low blood sugar can result in extreme depression, confusional states, temper outbursts, and so on. Endocrine disorders such as Addison's disease and hypothyroidism are classical for so-called myxedema madness. Polycythemia, heavy metal intoxication, idiosyncratic reaction to other medications can masquerade as behavioral abnormalities or illegal drug use. I'm also concerned in this regard is the timely detection of the multitude of side effects of psychotropic medications, including, for example, bone marrow failure, hypertensive crisis, cardiac arrhythmias, liver kidney failure, seizures, and so forth, as well as the interactions of psychotropic drugs with medications patients may already be taking for other medical problems. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience, views, and concerns. I'd be happy to try to answer questions.
Thank you, General. Would you be so kind, and this goes for all witnesses today, if you could fax your copy of your written testimony so it can be accurately reflected in the record. And our fax number is area code 907-465-2040. We'd really appreciate it. Are there questions of Dr. Miller?
907-465. Give me the last four again, please, sir.
Yeah, that was 907-465-2040.
Thank you.
Are there any questions of Dr. Miller? Hearing none, the committee wants to thank you very much, Doctor, for your testimony. Thank you. Next, I'd like to go to another off-neck location, and we'd like to hear from Dr. Kerry Rader, please. Dr. Rader, are you with us? Hello, Dr. Rader. And we'll go back to her then. Next we go to the Matsu then, Dr. Dwight Stallman. Dr. Stallman, do you hear us?
Yes, I do.
Could you identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, and please keep your testimony as close to 3 minutes as possible.
Yes, I'm Dr. Stallman. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist working as a medical director at LifeQuest, the Community Mental Health Center, here for the Matsu Borough. Since hearing about this a month or so ago, I've been concerned that the risk to patients would be too great having psychologists prescribe. Certainly there's risk and benefits to whatever we do, but I certainly wouldn't refer one of my family members to a psychologist who was prescribing. I just don't think that even with, certainly not with 10 weeks and even with 2 or 3 years, that there might be adequate training to competently do a good job with treating mental illness with medication. I think that Dr. Duke saying that he went for 2 or 3 years with training, certainly a psychologist wanted to enter a nursing program or a PA program and work under a physician or a psychiatrist, that certainly would be reasonable, but I don't feel that there's a really great need for this, and I think the risk to the public outweighs the possible benefit. Certainly there might be some cost savings, and managed care is doing a great job in saving money in health care, but like I say, if you want quality care and to keep the public safe and do the best job we can, I think it's a step in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stallman. Any questions of Dr. Stallman? Hearing none, we want to thank you for your time this afternoon, Doctor.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to go to Ketchikan and hear from Mr. Barry Christensen on House Bill 139. Could you identify yourself and your affiliation, please, Mr. Christensen?
Yes, my name is Barry Christensen. I'm a pharmacist, and I'm also currently the chair of the Alaska Pharmaceutical Association, which represents practicing and retired practicing pharmacists in Alaska. The Alaska Pharmaceutical Association Board of Directors and the Legislative Committee are opposing House Bill 139, mostly because our concerns of basically three things. Number one, this would set up two tiers of licensees, and it would be up to pharmacists in the state as gatekeepers to confirm the endorsements of the practitioners. And this is a concern to pharmacists. In the bill, it does mention that the Board of Psychology would transmit to the Board of Pharmacy a list of psychologists who have endorsements. Well, that's a good step. Historically, that process is pretty slow. Currently, our Board of Pharmacy only meets 3 times a year, so that list would probably be outdated before we got it. The last thing under Section D in Section 86.132, where it allows for a psychologist to have a supply of pharmaceuticals apparently at their office practice. We have a concern here in that there would possibly for a lack of a third check, if you will, that's currently present with the pharmacist being able to check for dosage and drug interactions, also the potential for abuse with a controlled substance. And the last thing we're a little bit baffled at looking at this bill was why it was only pertaining to controlled substances, being how there's a large, there are many medications that are being used as antidepressants that aren't controlled substances. Thank you for the opportunity.
The questions of Mr. Christensen, Representative Rakowski.
Thank you. Mr. Christensen, you noted that you had a concern as to how the Board of Pharmacy would monitor the endorsements and how this two-tiered process works. Would it be a situation as simple as the board would get a list of those psychologists who would be able to prescribe, and then you as a board send out that list to any pharmacy in the state so that they would know whether or not you could complete the prescriptions from these psychologists? I'm not quite clear how the whole process would work.
Well, I'm not exactly sure either, but I guess my understanding of looking at the bill would be that the Board of Psychiatry psychology would provide that to the Board of Pharmacy, and then it would be up to the Board of Pharmacy through the Division of Occupational Licensing to get those out to the individual pharmacies or pharmacists. And again, one of our concerns is that process seems to be pretty slow as it is, and we have some concerns also about another bill pending regarding the optometrists. For exactly that same reason, what we're looking at there, we're looking at a potential of 3 different types of licensees and the pharmacist being in charge of finding out what kind of endorsement.
The type of endorsement. So if you as the Board of Pharmacy were to not be on top of who was licensed as a prescribing psychologist and somebody who isn't licensed as a prescribing psychologist is able to get a prescription through your pharmacy, is there some fallout then to your pharmacy because you guys haven't exchanged the appropriate lists? Or am I making too much out of this?
No, I think that's exactly the point. And just for the record, I'm the part of the Alaska Pharmaceutical Association, not actually a member of the Board of Pharmacy. But in theory, if the Board of Pharmacy came and inspected my store as a practicing pharmacist and I had a prescription on file from someone who was not able to prescribe, then I could be reprimanded for that. That's correct.
Mm. Thank you.
Representative Sisna, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Christensen, Representative Murkowski had asked you a question about, or you'd been talking about the endorsements that would then be sent to you, and you made a comment, if I'm not mistaken, something about them not being in a timely manner, and the bill does address. That it says in a timely manner that you'd be notified. And I guess my question is, how does that work with prescribing physicians? Do you have problems in getting that kind of information with prescribing physicians? And what is it that isn't working that I think you made reference to, or did I hear you wrong?
Well, if I can clarify that, okay. I guess we don't currently, first of all, for prescribing physicians, as one of the other speakers from the lower 48 mentioned, when a physician graduates from medical school, they have prescribing rights right there. So basically, the only way they don't have prescribing rights once they're issued a license in a state is to have it taken away from them. So we don't have lists necessarily in the pharmacies of every practicing physician in the state. Although from time to time we're issued lists of physicians who have lost their license and are not able to prescribe either in total or certain classes of medications. And I believe that the legislation as it's written said that the Board of Psychology will notify the Board of Pharmacy in a timely manner upon termination, suspension, or reinstatement of an endorsement. We're just wondering if just the time lag between the two boards and then to the pharmacists themselves, how long that would take. And currently, we don't really have, there's no really two-tiered system already within the different prescribing groups right now.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Follow-up representative system.
Thank you very much. Yes, Dr. Christian, I guess the question I would have then is, upon graduation, how long does it usually take for you to find out that someone has received their medical degree and now can prescribe? And do you have problems with that?
Not typically, no.
Okay. And so in a timely manner, is that not specific enough? Is there what constitutes a timely manner, I guess, is my question.
Well, that would be a good question. I would think a timely matter would be a month or so after a person was endorsed to be able to prescribe in this case.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Further questions, Ms. Christian? Thank you very much, Ms. Christian. I know you want to testify on the other bill, too. So. Next, we'd like to go to Fairbanks and hear from Dr. Urban Rothrock.
This is Dr. Urban Rothrock. I'm a psychiatrist at the Fairbanks Psychiatric and Neurological Clinic, and I have been in practice here in Fairbanks since 1977. Before I start my remarks, I would like to say that I am a current member of the Alaska State Medical Board, but I want to make clear that my remarks are my opinions only and don't represent the board's position. As far as the objections that I had to this bill, I think they were covered much better by Dr. Miller than I would ever be able to pull together a brief presentation. I think the major objections that I had, and I'll keep this short, but 300 contact hours of training in areas of neuroscience, pharmacology, psychopharmacology, physiology, pathophysiology, appropriate and relevant physical and laboratory assessment, clinical experience, supervised clinical experience. These are things which there's no earthly way that any individual could cover those adequately in 300 hours, whether that comes down to 10 weeks or 7.5. If you go on a 40-hour week, those are subjects that I have had, and believe me, I could not, and I don't know anyone who could have gotten a working knowledge of any of those subjects in such a brief exposure. And I think it's kidding ourselves if we believe that it can be done that quickly. The other thing is there's provision for supervision during the treatment of 100 patients. After that, apparently, as I read the bill, there's no further supervision. I see no reference in there to any kind of continuing education to assure that the person is keeping abreast of this field. And in closing, I would just compare this with what the physician's assistant does. And of course, the physician's assistant always works with a supervising physician. But he has two 12-month years, 24 months of schooling. The average, that's minimum, the average in the United States, I think, is something like 108 weeks, which is a little more than 2 years. And then he is, of course, works in conjunction with the physician, and his work is always supervised. So I don't think that Dr. Duke's comparison of PAs and nurse practitioners and so forth to psychologists really is very helpful, because all these people come from a medical background, whereas most psychologists do not. So that the specialty training that they have on top of their previous medical training is probably easier for them to assimilate than it would be somebody who's coming in strange to the field. So I think it's a bad bill, which would only decrease the quality of care to people in the state of Alaska, and I would certainly urge you to vote against it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rockrock. If you do have a prepared statement and want care to fax it, our number is 907-465-2040.
Well, thank you. I didn't prepare a statement. I was just speaking extemporaneously. Would you like me to prepare one?
Your option, sir. Your election, any testimony you will provide in writing will be part of the permanent record. Thank you very much. Questions of Dr. Rothrock, Representative Halko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rothrock, has the State Medical Board taken a position on House Bill 139?
No.
We'll hear from that later. Oh, the medical board. Okay. With that, I would like to see if Dr. Carrie Rader is on in Anchorage. Dr. Rader, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Would you please identify yourself, your affiliation, and give us your testimony and try to keep it to 3 minutes?
Okay. My name is Carolyn Rader, and I'm a psychiatrist. I grew up here in Alaska and returned after completing my medical training about 3 years ago. Again, like Dr. Rothrock, a lot of the things that I wanted to say have already been covered pretty well. So I'll just stick to a couple other points. To second Dr. Rothrock's point about Dr. Duke's comparison of PAs to the psychologist training, Dr. Duke also said that nurse practitioners were comparable to their training, but in fact, I talked with Faye Riley, who used to run the advanced nurse practitioner in a mental health program at UAA, and their program included 1,700 hours of supervised clinical work with patients and about 1,500 didactic hours. So you can see it's not really comparable. another point I'd like to make is that one of the arguments I've heard for giving psychologists prescription privileges is that they would provide services to rural areas that aren't served by psychiatrists. But in fact, psychologists are already in oversupply in urban areas in Alaska and in undersupply in rural areas, just like psychiatrists are. And actually, psychiatrists travel throughout the state providing services to different rural areas. For instance, I travel to Homer. I have some other psychiatrists that I work with to travel to Barrow and King Cove and various other places around the state. And as telemedicine comes online, it's going to be a less and less of an issue. So I think that for the safety of the citizens of Alaska, we ought to be going with properly trained mental health care practitioners rather than, at least for prescription of medication, rather than going with shortcuts. So I would urge you to not pass this bill.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rader. Are there any questions of the committee? Seeing none, we appreciate your time to testify before the committee today, Dr. Rader.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to go to Anchorage and hear from Ms. Terrell Stark, is it?
Yes, it is.
Can you identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please? Hello? Are you?
Can you hear me all right?
Now we can hear you. Please.
Okay, my name is Terrell Stark. I am currently a patient of a psychiatrist and a psychologist here in, or a clinical psychologist here in Anchorage, Alaska. And I'm here today to testify in favor of H.R. 139 to allow the clinical psychologist to prescribe medications and or treatment of emotional and mental disorders. Dr. Robert Lane previously took pretty much care of everything I had written down, although I certainly want to talk briefly about the difficulties that I had in seeking the right treatment for my bipolar and depression, previously diagnosed by my psychologist. Due to medical protocol, I had to go to more than one psychiatric establishment in order to find the proper psychiatrist that would work one-on-one with me to manage my medication in order for me to return to work. This entire process took 18 months. I just went back to work last week. And that's all I have to share, and I am certainly in favor of H.R. 139. I can certainly see where it would be a benefit to our outlying areas, and with the support of the psychiatrists that are available, I think it would be very workable for a lot of people here in Alaska as well as outside of Alaska. And I thank you very much for letting me talk to you. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Stark, for coming towards the committee. Are there questions of Ms. Stark? Well, seeing none, we appreciate your coming and testifying, Ms. Stark, and wish you well on your reappointment now and your recovery. Thank you very much. Next, we'd like to hear from Dr. Wendell Wynn. Is that correct?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Doctor, we can. Please give us your name and affiliation and try to limit your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Wendell Wynn, W-I-N-N. I'm in the private practice of psychiatry in Anchorage. I'm a physician and board-certified psychiatrist. I have a medical practice based in Anchorage, but with an emphasis on rural consultation. And I hold degrees in psychology and medicine. I'm also a lifelong Alaska resident. I grew up on a homestead in rural Alaska, and as well as in low-income areas in Anchorage. I could say a lot about this particular bill, but with a three-minute limit, I'm going to limit my remarks to two main areas. I'd like to reinforce Dr. Rader's statements about the issue of rural access to care. It certainly is a critical issue within this state, but I think it's a false issue in regards to the bill before the committee. The rural areas of the state are served by psychiatrists and not psychologists. Many psychiatrists travel into the bush communities. Dr. Battaglia, McCarthy, Rader, myself, all have active practices and frequently visit villages and small towns. I've been doing this myself for over 20 years, and then with telephonic support at other times. I think rural residents in the state are entitled to medical care, and they'd be poorly served by a non-medical person prescribing these potent and potentially dangerous medications. Also, I enjoy the new technologies, and I'm actively involved in telemedicine, the Alaska Telemedical Project, that now provides specialty care access to rural Alaska. This is occurring actively in real time, not as a futuristic plan. It's occurring through corrections, the mental health centers, the military, and through the private sectors. Doctors Worrell, Rappaport, and myself are three psychiatrists that are rendering rural psychiatric care through telemedical links. Secondly, I want to emphasize the degree to which this bill is a physician, and through statute tries to convert a doctor of philosophy into a doctor of medicine. You cannot segregate prescriptive practices from medical practice. Medications aren't prescribed or administered in a vacuum, but they're integrated into a medical model with many complex medical issues. There are numerous examples, but for one would be the issue of side effects. How does a psychologist that prescribes start an IV or admit a patient to a hospital who's having a drug reaction? Do they know how to resuscitate someone with a cardiac arrhythmia induced by drug effects? Do they know how to use other non-psychiatric medications to counteract problems created by what they prescribe? I don't think so. I'd also point out to the issue of comorbid conditions. Medications interact with the hormonal systems and other systems in the body. Most non-psychiatric medications, including antibiotics, cardiac drugs, and anti-seizure medications, all have effects and interactions with the psychotropic agents that this bill is in regards to. In closing, as someone with advanced clinical training in medicine, psychiatry, and psychology, I can tell you that an education in psychology does not provide a foundation to practice medicine. Medical care should be provided by physicians. And I would very much like to urge the committee to defeat H.R. 139. With that, I'll reclose my remarks. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wynn. Are there any questions of the committee? Representative Murkowski.
Thank you. Doctor, I appreciate your comments about how this all ties in with the rural areas of the state and how we can provide better access through telemedicine or what have you. How important is it in the psychiatric field to have access to labs for your patients? I mean, if I just don't know enough about your field to know whether you do blood workups on people before you prescribe medication, whether that's part of your process or what you have to do. How important is it to have the access to what we have in the more urban centers?
Access to laboratory data, laboratory support is an important aspect of psychiatric practice. Of course, it would vary case to case, and there are complex protocols differentiating between when it's a relatively simple matter with simple medications and complex polypharmacy with neuroleptics, psychotropics, anticonvulsants, etc. In many of these situations, the physician needs a real-time access to blood levels or medical laboratory procedures.
And I'm assuming that access to that also requires that one understand what you're reading with the lab reports.
Well, this is true. The physician needs to not just read a number off of a lab slip. He needs to take that information in a context of how that affects the rest of the medical care and management of the patient in a holistic sense with a biopsychosocial aspects of complexity.
Thank you.
For the question, Dr. Wynn. Thank you very much, Dr. Wynn. If you have any testimony in writing that you care to forward, please provide it to the LIO and they can fax it to us.
I will do that. Thank you.
Next, we'd like to hear from Dr. Ramsey Nasser.
I'm online.
If you could identify yourself and your affiliation, please, and try to confine your testimony to 3 minutes. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. My name is Ramsey Nasser. I'm a board-certified psychiatrist, currently working with the Providence Behavioral Medicine Group. I have several points I would like to make. I'm almost completing my fourth year here in Alaska. If I have any regrets about that, it's that I didn't come here sooner. But back to the issue at hand, three out of these past 4 years were spent living and working in Nome, Alaska. And I want to say that to make the point that there are psychiatrists who do live out in rural areas in the bush, and travel to very remote sites. Another example is a colleague of mine by the name of Welby Jensen, who currently lives out in Kodiak. And as mentioned before, there are several psychiatrists, myself including, who do travel out to rural areas, sometimes for myself, not as much as I could and as I'd like to, but for the most part, we do travel out to rural areas. The other point I'd like to make is to comment on the long waiting list. I think all of us have long waiting lists, and that includes my psychological colleagues who also have long waiting lists, so I'm not so sure that that's really an issue. As far as the way I practice and the way my colleagues in my group practice is that if we have an appropriate referral, we will see somebody regardless of how long our waiting list is, and we'll see them in a timely manner. And I think that is a lot of physicians' practice. The issue of seamless care is another issue I'd like to comment on. The notion that a lot of patients have to come and see a psychologist and then go see a psychiatrist and maybe, you know, have cycled through a social worker before or whatever is a very real one. I think I know that a lot of my psychiatric colleagues are very good at providing psychotherapy, and a lot of us enjoy doing so. Unfortunately, the way the system is set up and the way it's limited by the insurance companies is the limiting factor. And I think if we're going to pass any bills, I would hope that we would consider passing bills to limit the way insurance companies limit the way we practice our field. The last issue I'd like to bring up, and I think it's been talked to a lot, so I'll just make a few points, is the issue of training. And in a sense, the issue of where the trends in psychiatric treatment are going. More and more psychiatric illnesses and the goal of psychiatric treatment is no longer just correcting chemical imbalances where you can throw a little Prozac at and make it better. In fact, what right now is happening is that they're creating more and more medications that really go into the inner workings of the cells and the neurons in the brain and throughout the body. And the lines between biochemistry, physiology, and anatomy are really becoming blurred. And I think a prior speaker made a point about the importance of physiology, biochemistry, and the basic sciences in the practice of medicine and the practice of prescribing medications. Also, I think the lines between what is mental illness, neurological illness, and physiological illnesses are becoming blurred also. And I do think that the comprehensive knowledge that a medical training provides for a psychiatrist is crucial in being able to practice and to continue to practice, not in just today's world, but also in tomorrow's world. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nassar. Is there any questions? Thank you, sir. Next, we'd like to hear from Dr. Roger Schaefer, please.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, sir.
Yes, Dr. Roger Schaefer. I am a psychiatric physician at the Veterans Administration here in Anchorage. My comments don't relate to anything that the federal government thinks in regards to these opinions. To my knowledge, they have not formed an opinion, so these are my own opinions. I'd like to first of all touch base on the access issue. Several physicians have already done that. For the last 7 years, I have been a psychiatric consultant to Nenana and to the Rail Belt and to Healy, and have gone up there every month to provide care and telephonic care in between times. I've also been involved in a lot of the activities regarding telemedicine in the state of Alaska, which are so critical to delivering care. And so I think the access issue is really a bit of a bogus issue. I think you will see that so many of us have really gotten involved around the state to provide rural care. The next point I'd like to make has already been underlined, which has to do with our background and training. I was trained in sociology and psychology and then went into medicine and had to take a great deal of training before I got into medical school. And then I got my 4 years of medical education a year of rotating internship and then 3 years of psychiatric residency. And I found that that combination was critical for me to be able to practice medicine and psychiatry over the last 25 years. So I can't underemphasize the need for knowing all organ systems to be able to effectively prescribe medication. I think that psychologists, by and large, psychologist training run quite a spectrum in terms of
the various programs that are available, but almost all of them are academic rather than medical in nature. I think that most of the psychologists that I have visited with, not only in the state of Alaska, but in other states I've practiced in the past, are against this kind of legislation, feeling that it goes way beyond the scope of their practice and that they would not be able to take a training course that would allow them to effectively practice in this area. We've already commented on the DOD pilot study that has is no longer present, and for the reasons that it's no longer present, we are clear. I think it goes without saying that it is impossible to prescribe without engaging in the practice of medicine. I'd like to close with a brief comment about a patient that I saw in the recent past. This patient was happened to be hearing voices and was requiring a complex medication adjustment to be able to help this person get that under control. This person also, by the way, happened to be suffering from peptic ulcer disease and hypertension and was on medications for that. The drug interactions associated with three different organ systems required a significant amount of knowledge for myself to have to be able to deal with that in an effective way and a safe way for that patient. It's for these reasons that I urge you not to move this bill out of committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions, Dr. Schaefer, Representative Murkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Schaefer, you mentioned that you travel up and down the Rail Belt area into some of the more rural areas. Some of the argument in favor of this bill is that there just simply are not enough psychiatrists to go around. And my question to you would be, you visit some outlying areas. Do you maintain, I guess, ongoing relationships with the nurse practitioners or the PAs in some of the rural communities so that if they have a question about somebody that they are treating, that there is some contact with a psychiatrist to say, well, look, you know, I've tried this. Do you have any other recommendations? Or are there walls between your practice and that of, say, a nurse practitioner or a PA?
Certainly, there is one practitioner in Rail Belt, and Healy, and he and I have worked together on a number of patients over the years. So I think the doors are really open to go back and forth and sharing. I've worked with a lot of nurse practitioners also in the region and have found that our collegial working relationships are very positive.
Thank you.
For the question, Representative Malko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on what Representative Murkowski said, it looks like one of the arguments for this bill is access to quality care. And so I was curious as to how many psychiatrists there are today compared to 10 years ago. And according to the State Medical Board, we have twice as many psychiatrists, licensed psychiatrists in the state of Alaska in 1999 than we did in 1989. So the number has doubled in the last 10 years. So as far as the access to care, as we've heard from a number of witnesses today, Mr. Chair, it sounds like there are more psychiatrists today than 10 years ago.
We have a representative from the association here. That you have a question?
No, just a comment.
Thank you very much, Dr. Schaefer.
Thank you very much.
I would like to go to Juneau now and get the testimony of Mary Jean Moore, please. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Moore.
Thank you. I'm Mary Jean Moore, the president of the Alaska State Psychiatric Association, and I'm a private practice psychiatrist in Anchorage. And rather than repeat everything that you've all heard over the last long period of time, thank you for paying such attention, the few points that we really do want to make is that we do have a lot more psychiatrists now than before. Access is not a tremendous problem. We do work well with the nurse practitioners, PAs, other paramedical people, and the training that psychology is proposing, which is 300 hours of training and then 100 patients, how you define 100 cases is not really well defined, doesn't equal the training of a psychiatrist, a nurse practitioner, a PA, or anyone else that's practicing in this field. We just don't see it as a turf issue or an economic problem for us. We really see it as a quality of care issue. So I'd really like to answer questions with my 3 minutes, if I can.
Sure, well, that's extra, but We try not to tell people that. Representative Sanders.
Yeah. It's a pretty common thread that $300 everyone thinks is not enough. Is there a time that might be enough? I mean, $1,200 or $600 or $400?
We really feel strongly that medical school is what's required. And also, there is a medical school available here. There's not a PhD psychology program here. There's not a psychology prescribing program here. We do have the WAMI Medical School here. You can do time at UAA, and it's coordinated then through Seattle, and a lot of the rotations come back. I myself do teach medical students here. So we have that available, and it works. And we have nurse practitioner programs here as well.
I think we heard the testimony today about 12,000 hours. Of the right. Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Moore, now let's see if I can do this right. It seems to me that one of our problems is that we have a growing number of psychiatrists who start with and work through their educational experience and their experiential supervised experience under a medical model, thinking of the human body and its physical reactions. Then we have a second group, which is a psychology group, which really starts with, I mean, there's various philosophies, but a behavioral idea. The way, the emotional response, the learned responses, those kinds of things. And we've got these two different bodies. And they both get a lot of education, and they're in two different places. And we have various kinds of fields that have kind of conflicts like that, where they start with kind of two different ways of looking at a situation or a person or whatever. And in this situation, psychiatrists cost a great deal more. Am I correct? You make more.
No, I
than psychologists?
When I looked at the reimbursement schedules for Medicare, for the codes that we overlap, they were not different. In Medicaid, Alaska doesn't pay for freestanding psychologists right now. They do pay for psychologists who work in community mental health or who work in a physician-directed clinic, and the overlapping codes were the same.
Okay.
So psychiatrists do tend to work a whole lot more hours. That, by numbers, that is true. They do a lot more inpatient work, a lot more call work, et cetera. But the codes that overlap were the same.
Okay. Then the second part of this, Mr. Chair, is that in some treatments would be 9/10 behavioral and a little bit of medication, I think, you know, as much as I know. And another would be far more medical oriented, depending on the kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And can't you see personally a need for both areas of expertise and possibly at least some ability to have more charge of the pharmacological answers by both?
No, I don't.
You don't?
Because I really see the pharmacology part as being that difficult and that complex. And it's true, you can have behavioral problems and medical problems that coexist. So you can have depression and a school problem, or depression and trouble getting along with people at work. Or you can have high blood pressure and those same problems, or diabetes and those same problems. They do coexist. But just like you wouldn't say, well, let's go to a behavioral specialist to treat my diabetes because that impacts my behavior. I don't think you can say, let's go to a behavioral specialist to treat my medically based depression because that impacts my behavior. They're two separate fields. And there is overlap with any kind of brain-body thing. You can't take someone's brain out of their body and just treat that. You can't say, well, I'm only going to treat mental illness and nothing else, because your brain is part of your body. And we're trying to get towards more holistic care and treating whole people, not just right knee specialist, left knee specialist. Here we'd have a brain and behavior specialist who doesn't know anything about the whole rest of the body. And I don't think you can do that and still be seeing a person as a whole person and treating them well.
Representative Halko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me ask you about access to care. As I mentioned before, talking with Leslie at the Alaska State Medical Board, she said that the number of licensed psychiatrists has doubled in the state of Alaska over the last 10 years. She also made an interesting comment. She talked about the much wider disbursement of these professionals in rural communities, for instance, Sitka, Kodiak. Can you talk about how you're delivering care in rural Alaska?
Yes, we do have many more psychiatrists living in rural communities than we did at any other time. And a lot of that is simply by choice. Dr. Nassar liked Nome. He likes dog mushing. He decided to move to Anchorage for personal reasons. But there's people who just really like those communities, just like business people, accountants, et cetera, like rural communities. There also are a lot of communities that haven't got enough of a population base to support a given specialist. You really do need to have a fair number of people to support a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a cardiologist or any other type of special, or an accountant for that matter. A lot of those communities really don't have a professional there. Also, as a mental health professional, I can tell you from personal experience, it's a little tough living in a real small community because people treat you a little bit different when you're a psychiatrist or a psychologist. It's really true. You can stop conversation in a party in a heartbeat when you walk in. Like, everybody's thinking about me. So your life gets a little strange in some small towns. But just like people do circuits in other professions, the judicial circuit, we have the Ninth Circuit Court, we all do circuits. We really do. I do, Dr. Robinson covers a juvenile correction facility. Dr. Ellis is here, goes between Anchorage and Juneau. I think there wasn't a person that I heard on the phone today who doesn't go to some rural place. Other people in my office go down to the Kenai, cover Copper Center, Glen Allen. We do it all the time, and it's just kind of the normal way you work.
Dr. Moore, I'd be careful of drawing an analogy between your profession and Ninth Circuit and this legislature.
Thank you, sir. We're not lawyers.
Right. No, we understand that. I'm just giving you a fair warning. Dr. Moore, how many psychiatrists are there licensed in the state of Alaska?
Frankly, Vice Chair Halkrow probably has a firmer number than I do. In our association, on our mailing list, I believe we had 79 on our mailing list at last we checked.
Representative Halkrow, can you fill the committee in?
95.
Which could be governmental or something like that.
Right. There, if you're in military or public service, you can have your APA membership through a district branch that's government. So we wouldn't have them on our list.
Given the number of psychiatrists testifying at today's hearing, I hope nobody has a problem today that needs looking at it. But we'll be done as quickly as possible. Further questions of Dr. Moore? Very good. Thank you, Dr. Moore.
Thank you.
For coming today and your time. Next, I'd like to hear from Dr. List, please. And welcome back to the committee, Dr. Moore.
Thank you. My name is Jerome List. I'm president of the State Medical Association, and I am not a psychiatrist. I'm an otolaryngology head and neck surgeon, and wanted to perhaps reinforce this is not strictly a business competition issue. I think that we're all very concerned at the State Medical Association about folks who are not trained in the medical field utilizing medications that have very significant impact on the human body. I'm not going to repeat a lot of the information that's been given to you. I think it presents both sides of the issue very, very nicely. I do want to point out a recent well-publicized lawsuit in which a very well-trained physician, very respected physician in this community, through the scrutiny of her nurses and what have you, misprescribed some medications and the patient died. And so there's great potential for that to happen at any point in time, even in the hands of very experienced physicians. And so I would urge you that this catastrophe, this type of thing, not happen again. I might also address to my colleagues, the psychologists, about the liability issues that might bring upon them in a situation like that. I'm certainly not against psychologists and in addressing our community healthcare issues. I think that a couple of solutions that I look at this problem. One is a tighter relationship. We don't need to work as boxes and separate independent practitioners. We need to work together. We need to work as a team. I think the psychologist provides some very important services that are perhaps our psychiatrists are not providing, and vice versa. And I think that we need to work as a team and deliver that health care system in a more organized, coordinated fashion. I believe very strongly that telemedicine and telehealth and telepsychiatry will help break down some of these barriers in the future, and I will, on behalf of the association, continue to work on some of those projects, because I think telehealth and telepsychiatry will be the premier model for telehealth to occur in the state of Alaska, and I think that is perhaps the specialty area that is going to be most appropriately fit for this type of technology. I'd be glad to entertain any questions.
Any questions of Dr. Lewis? Representative Murkowski, then Hucker.
Thank you. I appreciate the words that you said about cooperation and hopefully working something out. I've said before on the record, I don't really know that much about what psychiatrists and psychologists do. I think I've got a pretty much a layman's view on that. Is there too much turf between the practices where we couldn't resolve this? I listened to people say, well, I had to go from a psychologist to a psychiatrist, explain my whole story and all the angst that goes with it just so that I could get the medication that the psychologist couldn't give to me. Is there some way that you can marry the situation so that the patient doesn't have to go through the hoops short of giving psychologists prescription authority?
I think in some cases that's worked out very nicely, and there are some large clinics in Anchorage that have integrated clinical psychologists along with a psychiatrist, and again, I think that the areas that they can deal with can complement each other. I will confess that about 15 years ago I had a brief episode of depression. And what was my choice? My choice was to go to a psychologist. I mean, they did a wonderful job. I mean, I haven't had to take any medications. It was not necessary to do that. And that was an excellent result, you know, for that. And personally, and I'm more at viewing, I think that sometimes modern medicine, as we see it today, actually uses too many medications. We have too many pharmaceutical agents that are pushing medications, and that, and I'd like to see actually a reduction in that, if anything else. I think we prescribe too many medicines in this day and age. But back to your question, I think that those issues can sometimes, because there is some overlapping, we see this with ophthalmologists and optometrists, there's some overlapping of duties, and so there's been an unwillingness in the community to be able to work together. And I believe very strongly that if they work together as a team, they actually complement each other. It's a win-win situation for everybody. Those are hard things to overcome. They're not going to happen overnight. But those are some of the goals that I see, is getting these groups, because they complement each other, they work together very well, and ultimately they provide better health care for our communities.
Representative Halcombe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a question for Dr. Lane, but I will ask you, malpractice insurance. If I am a psychologist and suddenly I have the ability to write prescriptions, is that going to increase or...
Oh, I'm sure it is, and that's why I don't know that issue has been addressed or dealt with. Again, I just bring to light this recent malpractice suit. I mean, millions of dollars are going to change hands in this type of thing. And I can tell you that my malpractice premiums are probably based on the fact that I do have a large liability in practicing medicine, and I'm not sure that the savings are going to be realized here. If we look at the overall cost of delivering medicine, if you start putting in malpractice premiums, if you start putting in the training of these folks, I'm not sure that we've really saved any healthcare dollars. I don't have studies or figures to back that up, but sit down and think. I mean, I'm not sure what a psychologist's malpractice insurance premiums are. I can tell you that mine are over $30,000 a year. I mean, that's healthcare dollars. Those are healthcare dollars spent on my insurance premiums. And so if you put everything together, I'm not sure it's going to offset, you know, the savings that we get.
Yeah. Representative Murkowski.
Thank you. Just one last question. I believe it was Representative Sanders that asked a question earlier about the number of hours that may be appropriate if we are to go ahead and give psychologists prescription authority. Obviously, the testimony we've heard is that 300 is not appropriate. We just heard a bill in this committee last week requiring manicurists to have a minimum of 250 hours training for health safety issues. So in my mind, you know, before we let something out of this committee, we're going to have to make sure that we've got a comfort with that level of training. Can you give us any guidance on what might be reasonable as far as you've heard?
I'm not sure that I can give you a specific number of hours, and perhaps 8,000 in a medical residency training program is not enough. I mean, it's hard to tell. I think that perhaps a sixth grader could be trained. Well, let's not go as far as that. I mean, let's look at the health aides that have done such a wonderful job in this state of providing health care in the rural communities and have prescriptive, so to speak, or have the availability of certain medications. They can deal with a certain number of medications in 95% of the cases. The difficult part is dealing with that 5%, and I think